is talk about bonds, the U.S. dollar, gold, or crude oil, because those are products that we that I cover with my hedge fund clients, and that we also include in our Global Pro product, which is our hedge fund, basically our mini hedge fund, our model portfolio that we build. So if any of you are interested in specifics about those markets, you will need to subscribe to a different product. If you're a trader, we're toying with the idea of launching a trader's product. It'll be somewhere in between our retail product and our hedge fund product as far as the amount of correspondence you receive and the access to me. But so far, I think the people that are kind of kicking the tires of our trading product right now like it, and I think it's adding a lot of value. And I know they're if they're following some of our ideas, they're doing very well. So again, we won't be talking about the bonds, the U.S. dollar, gold, or crude oil on this call. But what I do want to do is make sure everybody understands exactly what my forecast is for the S&P 500 and the stock markets of the world. So let's jump straight into this. The first of all, a little background about BAM Investor, the reason we launched it, and what we're our goal is. As you guys probably know, I work with hedge funds and institutional clients, and I do that on a regular basis. I have correspondence with them pretty much all day long, every day. And some of them have phone access to me, others do not. And as part of that, I do some individual stock work for them. So what we'll do is I'll do analysis of individual stocks that they want me to take a look at, because they're in their personal portfolios, their hedge fund portfolios. Or if I happen to stumble into an idea on my own, something I might be trading in my personal account or just in a stock in the news, I'll analyze that using the model, and then I'll serve that up as a potential idea to them. Sometimes I know what my hedge fund clients are doing, and sometimes I don't. I don't ask to know. Sometimes they tell me, and there could be conflicts of interest if I were to mention some of those stocks to you all as individual investors. So that's why you don't hear me talking a whole lot about individual stocks. And if you do, they're ideas that I've come up with as opposed to ideas that my clients have come up with, okay? So let's see. Let's start with a couple individual stocks, just because I've talked about some of those, and then that'll give more people a chance to join us here on the call if they're coming late before we talk about the market averages. You guys have probably seen me talk about GMCR, which is Green Mountain Coffee Roastery. That's a stock that I believe is going to trade to $10 based on magnet levels in the model and sort of the collapse setup that I see in that stock. That stock's, in my work, very similar to Under Armour, Crocs, Boston Market, or Boston Chicken, if you guys remember that name, Krispy Kreme Donuts. These are sort of retail stocks that people fall in love with. And because they like the products, or they visit the restaurant or the store or whatever, they end up buying it with the intention of holding it for the rest of their life. Unfortunately, the momentum players buy things like this with the intention of riding it up as long as it's going to continue up, squeezing the shorts, and then moving out of the stock and letting it implode, basically. So that's the case with Green Mountain Coffee, I believe, and I am short that personally. I own puts and a variety of other things. Also, Apple. Apple's really interesting now because, and again, if you guys are just joining the call, these are just sort of bonus recommendations that I make occasionally to, that I'll mention occasionally either on Twitter or in our reports that we send out. This is not part of our product offering, so this isn't something that if you guys do join, this isn't something you should expect to see on a regular basis. This is purely sort of bonus information for people who either trade or might actually be involved in the stock and might want to lighten up on it or move out of the way. What's interesting about Apple Computer is that it's one of these sort of hype stocks that's actually become one of the largest, or the largest capitalization stock out there right now. And typically what happens in that kind of a situation is there's there's so much good news, and so much good news is priced into the stock that it doesn't take much for it to roll over and get hurt badly. What's interesting about this setup is that the general market, the major market averages, are obviously in a crash setup in my work. And so if you have a very crowded long, what the hedge funds call a crowded long, which simply means it's owned by the majority of, you know, people who are in a position to own a stock long, it's like elephants trying to escape out of a small exit door at the same time. So they'll ride this because they're basically momentum investors. They'll ride Apple Computer as long as it's in an uptrend. But if it breaks the uptrend, even if they don't hear fundamental news that changes their outlook over the long term, they will exit the stock, and it will be a stampede-like exit. So, you know, there might not be a situation where Apple Computer comes out with bad news or misses earnings or is overtaken by some new fantastic product. It just might be a result of Apple being caught up in a market crash. But I actually have a target, and this is these normally are very, very reliable targets based on the rules of my magnet work. And it's a $45 target in Apple. So you guys know Apple's a stock that's trading well over $200. That's obviously a huge wipeout in that stock. But I believe it will trade all the way back now to $45 between this year and the third quarter of 2011. And it could be there this year, as bearish as the market looks. So there's a couple individual stocks for you guys. Let's get straight to the S&P 500. The whole idea of BAM Investor is to cater to individual investors who are trying to manage their own portfolios. So what we're trying to allow them to do is we're trying to say we believe that we have a tool, the Behavioral Analysis of Markets model, that can do a good job of timing the market, whereas most of the talking heads you'll see on CNBC and Bloomberg will tell you that it's impossible to time a market or to know when to enter and exit the market. We believe that's just because they're lazy or they've never taken the time to try to understand it, and we think we can accomplish that goal. So what we're trying to do is let individual investors see when we're out of the market or when we're in the market, and that would be for investors who are involved in index fund investing, where they simply invest in the S&P 500 index fund, dollar cost average, and they tend to stay in the market and ride it up and ride it down. We think that'll be a terrible investment technique over the coming 8-10 years. We think you'll probably be either greatly underwater or basically right back where you started. So we don't think that's a good idea. What we're going to try to do is we're going to try to be in the market whenever a 15% or greater move should unfold in a bull phase, and we want to be out of the market when a 15% or greater bear phase hits the market. For aggressive traders or aggressive investors, they can subscribe to our Global Pro product, and what we're going to do there is we're going to not only exit the market during times when we think the market's going to decline 15% or greater, we're also going to try to make money on between 2 and 20% of our investable cash. We'll park the other 80% or more in in T-bills or in a money market fund that's government insured. And then we'll use ultra ETFs as a way to add type of volatility that we're looking for to capture moves in stocks, commodities, or currencies, either bullish or bearish, so that we can add, I mean, if we do a great job, I think we could actually add 15 to 20% to the entire portfolio, even with 80% sitting in cash, and that's going to be my goal. That would require me having returns of between 50, 100% or greater on the 20% of the portfolio, which would be placed in this model portfolio. But if we can achieve anywhere near that, if we can even beat the market and have positive returns during the types of bear markets that I think we're facing in the future, well, that would be a huge victory in and of itself. So we have been out of the market since October. We missed a 7% move to the upside into the April top. That 7% was given back in a matter of a handful of days into the crash, mini crash on May 6th. And we expect to be right back through those lows in all the indices this week. So the crash window that we're in right now extends out into the fall, but then we'll have very specific windows within the larger window where we expect downside acceleration and the types of moves that we saw on May 6th, the so-called flash crash day. So the near-term crash window that we're looking at here, and the reason I want to get you all on the telephone and make sure everybody's on the same page, is that that opens up on June 4th. That window will extend into June 8th. During that window, we would expect at a very minimum for the S&P 500, to trade down to the 944 level, which is a magnet level in our work. And if we crash during June, I would expect to trade all the way back down to the 680 level, which carries us, you know, within a handful of points of the March 2009 low. By the time we trade into July and August, I would expect us to be back through the March 2009 low at 667. And then as we move into the fall, come into another crash window, and I would expect us to, at that point, be down into my target for 2010, which is S&P 529. And that's a target that we published back in 2007, when we said that we thought the market would crash to the 680 level into 2008. We missed that slightly because the 680 level was reached in the first quarter of 2009, but we had made the majority of that move in 2008, of course. And then we also said that we thought after a bounce in 2009, rather, the market would roll back over and continue the crash, trade down to the S&P 529 level into during 2010. So that's where we are. Some people have asked me questions about whether or not my model is as bearish as Robert Prechter's model and some of the other models out there that are calling for, say, you know, under sub-500 S&P readings, even down into the 300s in the S&P. The answer is yes, long-term, but I don't really like to talk that much about it in the short term. I like to focus on the trading opportunities at hand and make sure everyone's, you know, focused on that. This is a pretty depressing looking scenario, and so it's bad enough without borrowing trouble from the next 2-3 years down the road. So I prefer to just focus on this 529 target this year, and then we can talk about, based on what my velocity model looks like, we can talk about, you know, targets as low as 280 on the S&P. Something like that would come between 2011 and 2016 in our work. So from a macro perspective, we disagree 100% with people talking about inflation. Everything I look at in my work and all the commodities and currencies and everything else I look at is painting a picture of deflation. When you take a step back from all the noise and forget about the stimulus, look at where the stimulus is headed, you start to see that it's pretty obvious that we don't have to worry about inflation yet, at least. And that's because this money is just going to plug holes in the sinking ship. In other words, these are derivatives bets gone bad that were written over the past 5 years. And what we're doing now is we're using taxpayer money, basically, to go plug up those holes in the ship, whether they're in a bank or in a company like Bear Stearns or a mortgage company, an AIG, which is an insurer of this, of the derivatives. So anyway, there's so many holes out there. There's so many massive holes in the economy that need to be filled due to the fact that so many derivatives were written over the past 10 years that, you know, I think it'll be literally impossible to fill those holes. And until those holes are filled, there isn't any extra money to spill over and create inflation, really. So that doesn't mean we can't have a scenario where real estate markets, stock markets, art markets, collectible cars, all the things that have inflated over the past number of years, deflate. That's exactly what I think will happen. We'll have a horrible deflationary depression, and those assets that most of us consider our largest core holdings of our investment portfolios or our investment world, while the everyday expenses that we all incur, like food and medical costs and insurance and tuition and things like that, go through the roof, and taxes. So we can have this scenario where it's not stagflation, it's not inflation, it's not deflation. It's something that I don't have a word for yet. I'm all ears if any of you can come up with something. But basically, you have all of the large assets that we all hold, and the things that make people feel rich in life, and the things that make people feel like going out and spending money, because in the back of their mind they think their house is worth X, or their portfolio, stock portfolio, is worth X or Y, that they think they gives them that confidence to go and spend money. This should be the opposite. This should make them pull back, pull in their horns, try to fix their own personal balance sheets, and at the same time, any extra income will probably be going to paying higher taxes and all these other expenses that are going through the roof. So, basically, again, just think in terms of the macroeconomic backdrop being one of deflation, at least through the rest of 2010, and maybe the first quarter of 11, we'll start talking about a possible sort of hyperinflation look to the grains, to wheat and corn and some of those things, not for the time being. And basically a backdrop of where we're repairing this huge credit bubble. The credit bubble was the problem. The credit bubble was what created the NASDAQ bubble, the real estate bubble, and the crude oil bubble. And those were just merely symptoms of this large credit bubble. So as this thing unwinds itself, unfortunately, at the exact time when you really want to try to reflate things as this to fight the deflationary pressures, we're going to be unwinding the credit bubble and doing the exact opposite. So it's not a good scenario. We talked about the June 4th through June 8th crash window. After that, the next crash window will come into June 21st. So for those of you who are going to decide to not join us after this trial ends, there's my gift to you. Keep your head up again during the June 21st period in the days, say 2-3 days in front of it and behind it, okay? Rod, unless you can think of something else, that's it, and I need to actually run to another call. I could spend three to five more minutes if you want to. Do you want to take a call?
That's great. No, that's great. I was actually going to ask you some questions. I would expect that a lot of people on the call are probably having a hard time believing that we're going to hit these targets. And you talked about, some potential catalysts. The question I have, I guess, is, depending on what our government does and continues to do to keep this market from really declining at, that type of acceleration, do you think it's possible that we continue in kind of a trading range over a period of time? We really don't see it start to crack until later this year or even next year?
I don't think so. The nature of the decline so far in this market, if you overlay a chart of the Japanese yen and the U.S. dollar to the S&P 500, you'll see that this is a very mechanical unwind, and that's exactly what we expected to see. So if there were nothing going on in the background to force hedge funds to sell, then I would say, yeah, you're probably right, Rod, that the government might be able to pull a few more rabbits out of the hat and keep us at least in some type of a trading range. But when you have a crowded trade like the hedge funds being short the Japanese yen and short the U.S. dollar so that they can initiate the carry trade that they're involved in, once that starts to unwind, it just feeds on itself. And so we're sort of in that phase now where it doesn't really matter what the government does. the strength in the yen, if I'm right, over the coming months is going to be so overwhelming that it'll cause a mass exodus of an unwind of all these bets that these hedge fund operators have placed in various markets around the world, the largest of which is the stock markets of the world. So this is sort of a no place to hide scenario for any of you that are outside the U.S. The answer, some of you have asked me whether or not this is a U.S. specific problem or if other stock markets of the world should participate in the decline. My answer is yes. All stock markets of the world, I believe, will crash and move rapidly right back through the 2009 lows or 2008 lows, depending on which index you're looking at, that low those lows that they posted.